Hey, it's Mae Whitman, and I play Frankie in the new Realm podcast, The Sisters. The Sisters is about a museum curator of medical oddities who investigates the origins of a mutated skeleton with two layers of bones. Soon, she uncovers an extraordinary mystery that connects her present with one family's tragic past in hauntingly dangerous ways. Listen to The Sisters wherever you get your podcasts.
Ugh, another pointless video call where nothing gets done. I think you're on mute, David.
Sorry. What did I miss?
IT just approved Miro for the whole company.
Miro? That's the...
online whiteboard for team collaboration. We can make these long video meetings so much shorter with Miro boards. We can share ideas, feedback, and updates on them whenever. Actually see what we're talking about.
It's all online.
Miro will make our flexible work setup so much easier, with one virtual space for our brainstorms, projects, presentations.
Oh, that sounds kind of amazing. So I don't need to wake up for 6 a.m. calls with the London office anymore.
Now you're getting it.
Don't let time zones get in the way of your team working well together. See why 99% of the Fortune 100 trust Miro to get good work done from anywhere. Get your first three boards free at Miro.com. That's M-I-R-O.com.
Hey, sweetie, what do you think of our new car from Carvana?
Think it can handle our busy family?
Well, we have 7 days to see. First, we can take the scenic route to the beach and stargaze through the moonroof. We'll see if your drums fit in the trunk. Then we can pick up mommy's friends and check out that legroom. And we should really visit grandma. She's getting up there.
That's like a whole lifetime in 7 days.
And like one busy family.
With our 7-day money-back guarantee, you can confidently shop for cars 100% online. Visit Carvana.com for all terms and conditions. We'll drive you happy. At Carvana.
Hello, and welcome to a very special episode of
The
Geek So as you can see, this is a very special episode of the Geek Buddies because we are missing one of our Geek Buddies and our fearless leader, John Rocha the Outlaw. As some of you may know, John Rocha bravely and valiantly fought off COVID only to have it turn into a bit of bronchitis. So he is out and the inmates are running the asylum. So today... And I guess that is Shannon running the asylum right there. That is you having a good time there, buddy?
I've been planning that all morning.
Oh God. So I am Michael Vogel, a writer and producer of animated TV shows and movies.
And this is Shannon McClung. I'm a television actor and an animation writer, where for right now I have a job working on Strawberry Shortcake, Barry in the Big City. Depending on how today goes, we'll see if I still have it.
Yeah, before we dive into everything, we want to thank our sponsor, Carbon Health, up there in the corner. Carbon Health has 110 locations nationwide, 80 locations in California, Bay Area, Los Angeles, Sacramento, San Diego. They have all the needs you need for any medical emergencies, any medical situations, advanced care at most of their urgent care facilities, testing and treatment for everything from strep throat to STDs to COVID. They are one of the top primary care locations in California. You can get a doc in your pocket, carry them around with you. And we really encourage everybody to check out Carbon Health because there is a lot of COVID still out there. And we love Carbon Health and they love us because they believe that everyone deserves a healthcare provider who is an active partner supporting you in your efforts to feel better and live a healthier life. So we love them. They love us. And we're very happy that they are with us, especially Because we're down one outlaw today. So obviously, COVID is clearly still a thing. So we appreciate Carbon Health, and we hope you guys all check them out. Now, if you guys are returning buddies here at the Geek Buddies, then welcome back. And if you are first-time Geek Buddies, welcome. We're glad you're here. And here's how things work. Usually, we have three Geek Buddies, and we do three geek news topics, and then we take a break and dive into our main topic. Today, we have two Geek Buddies, so we're going to do two geek topics, but one is kind of supersized, and then we're going to dive into our main topic, which is discussing the state of affairs at DC, what the future of DC holds, and apparently what I would do if I was running DC, because John decided to tweet that out.
Well, and not just John, but a lot of our audience has said that as well. You know, we've listened to Vogel opine over the years on the things that could be done, the things that should be done. And today we're just putting the spotlight on him to see what he would do if he were to step into this job as the head of DC. So we're kind of giving Vogel it blue sky here. We're not going to throw all of the complicatedness, like, well, what if they're low budget? What if it's high budget? What if it's this? What if it's that? We're just saying, Michael Vogel, you're in charge of the DC films. What do you do from here on in? But I think before we get to that, Vogel is back from Burning Man. Vogel, real quick, how was the desert this year?
The desert was hard. I will say that I have been to Burning Man 12 times, and this trip is not in my top 10. It was a tough one. It was hot. It was dusty. There were complications. Any trip at Burning Man is always a valuable trip. It's always a fascinating thing to go out into the desert and live like you are in a Mad Max movie for a few days. And that is definitely what it felt like. Definitely some good times. Definitely some fun adventures. But on the whole, this was a tough one. If you are in Southern California right now, you know that it is very, very hot. But if you are living in the city, you can find air conditioning. You cannot find that in the desert. So between that and epic, epic dust storms, there was one night that I was out with some friends. We thought we were going to look at some art, but we got caught in a dust storm and ended up walking our bikes through 6 feet of visibility and just followed music until we found the city again. And it was a harrowing journey, one that I would not like to repeat. So we will see what the future holds for Mike Vogel and Burning Man.
Well, shall we jump into the show here, Mikey?
We absolutely should, Shannon. Let's do this thing. I believe you are kicking us off today.
With trailers. Really, it's just two trailers, but it just feels unnatural not to say three. So this morning, the first trailer dropped for Glass Onion, a Knives Out mystery. So this is the sequel to Knives Out that starred Daniel Craig from Rian Johnson that came out a few years ago, really kind of took the box office by storm. Just a throwback to these great old star-studded mysteries. And in the interim, they knew they were going to do another one. They made a deal with Netflix. So now these movies, second part and a third part, they're going to Netflix. So today we got our first look. And again, just like the first one, this is a star-studded cast. Joining Daniel Craig, we got Jessica Henwick, we got Edward Norton, we got Dave Bautista, we've got Janelle Monáe, we got Leslie Odom Jr., Kate Hudson, Catherine Hahn. And based off this first trailer, again, it looks like it is clearly cut from the same cloth. I mean, it just looks like it's going to be a blast. I mean, it's a short trailer, but we definitely get the location change. This one, they're going to be on, it looks like, an island in Greece. And yeah, I just thought this one looked great. But Michael, what did you think? Our first look at Glass Onion.
It was really funny. Watching the trailer, I remember when we reviewed the trailer for Knives Out when it came out. No one really knew what it was. The trailer came out and we were all really excited about it. And now watching this one, getting more of the same, the thing that I was really struck by was that I think Rian Johnson has landed on a formula that the Murder on the Orient Express and Death on the Nile want to be, but aren't quite. I mean, I think with both of these movie franchises, you sort of have the, here's a mystery, here's a star-studded cast, here let's watch it unravel. But whereas I think like Murder on the Orient Express and particularly Death on the Nile didn't really land for audiences, even though they're based on those classic Agatha Christie stories. Rian Johnson kind of writing and directing these original stories, something feels more fresh and exciting about them. Something feels a little bit different. Particularly with Knives Out, there was a lot of commentary on our society on the whole, on class, on rich versus poor, on liberal versus conservative. And there was really something more than just here's a star-studded mystery. So I kind of hope that he continues in that vein with this movie and that he gives us a star-studded mystery that's a really great whodunit that's hard to figure out, but that there's a little bit more there. And if he does, this franchise beats the other one. Like, I think we have a new contender for best sort of a modern-day movie mystery franchise, and I'm really feeling like it's this one.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I mean, it looks like there might even be some sort of musical sequence. Like when they're going through the cast, you see Kate Hudson what looks like it could be the finale of some sort of musical sequence. We've got Dave Bautista rocking what looks like some trunks from his old WWE days while shooting a pistol in the air. We have Catherine Hahn dropping a holy shit. I mean, it just looks like it's going to be a blast. And the one... I don't know if a critique, but the one hang up for me is, man, this is something that I would have loved to have seen in a theater. This is the type of movie that I think is just built for sort of communal viewing. I remember when we saw Knives Out in the theater, and it was just so much fun to not only enjoy the story that's being presented, but also to feel the energy of everyone else, this packed audience seeing that. So on occasion, Netflix movies do come out in the theater like a week ahead of time. I don't think that that will be the case with this. I think they probably will say, but it is coming out on December 23rd. So it is sort of an early Christmas gift. But I'm really crossing my fingers that we get, because you know, Netflix does have a theater here. My fingers are crossed that maybe they will show it and that we'll get to do a big group viewing.
I hear what you're saying, and it's definitely a bigger conversation, but I think that it doesn't bother me. I love going to the movies. As you know, we've been doing it since we were freshmen in college. But I love going to movies. I love seeing a movie on the big screen. But now that we have a lot of these kind of really big movies with big name directors, with big stars in the cast, like coming out on streaming services, I kind of dig that too. I enjoy it. I mean, we're going to talk about Disney Plus Day in a little bit, but I kind of enjoyed waking up and realizing that the brand new Pinocchio is on my TV and I can watch it when I'm done with all my meetings for the day. Like, there's something kind of nice about having that movie level quality just delivered to the comfort of your home. Now, is that going to destroy movie theaters forever? I think we've been talking about that on Geek Buddies since the pandemic started. I don't know, but that one doesn't bother me as much as it bothers you. But okay. I mean, if you want to go see it in a theater, I'll absolutely go do it. So don't not invite me.
I see watching a movie with you means more to me than it does to you.
Okay.
Anywho.
Okay.
Speaking of things that we can watch at home, oh, also Glass Onion, December 23rd on Netflix. We got the trailer for Tulsa King. So this is a Paramount Plus series. This is from Taylor Sheridan of Yellowstone, 1883. Hell or High Water fame, and it's starring Sylvester Stallone. Like, I thought this trailer, hearing the concept of this, I was like, that is going to be an absolute home run, or it's going to look like one of those Sylvester Stallone movies prior to Rocky Balboa, when he was sort of kind of like, he'd pop up in a movie here, he'd pop up in a movie there. But this one is about a former mafia, I think it was a capo. Is that the term? A former mafia capo who's been in prison. He gets out. He went to prison because he didn't snitch. Like he did the honorable mafia thing, and comes out expecting the world to be one way, and then he gets sent off to Tulsa, Oklahoma, by the people in charge. And basically, what he does, as this, you know, basically setting up a criminal shop in Tulsa. So Taylor Sheridan, I think, is probably one of the best writers out there right now. I've been very fortunate that I've been auditioning for one of his series, which I won't name here because they've yet to cast me. But they keep calling me, and it's breaking my heart. Vogel has had to hear this so many times. But this show looks, I mean, it just looks like it's going to be a lot of fun. Vogel, what did you think of our first look at the Tulsa King?
The main thing I think is I'm really sad John's not here today, because this trailer has John Rocha the Outlaw written all over it. I mean, I'm watching this trailer and I'm like, yeah, I'll check this out. But I know that John Rocha loves this trailer. Like, yes. I don't even, like he's definitely on board with this. I think it looks great. I agree. I think Sylvester Stallone has reached this point that I love it when actors and actresses reach this point where their acting has reached what I like to call the I give no fucks acting. Like, they've been through it. They've been through the good. They've been through the bad. They've had those projects that failed. They've had those projects that went great. And they've just reached a point in their careers where they're just very comfortable doing what they're doing. And they're just barely even acting anymore. It just looks like they're existing on camera, which is kind of what you want ideally as a performer. And that's how Sylvester Stallone looks here. You're just kind of like, yep, he is just Stalloning all over. And it looks delightful. It's a little bit, it felt a little bit Get Shorty. It felt a little bit like the serious version of My Blue Heaven. Like, there was a little bit of everything in there. But yeah, it looks fun. I mean, if the show manages to capture that vibe that's in the trailer of Stallone just having an absolute blast playing this role, I think it'll be a lot of fun. And to my point about things on streaming, whoever thought we'd get a TV series with Sylvester Stallone in it? It's kind of great. It's not really necessarily like my main cup of tea the way it is yours or maybe Johnny's cup of tea of the whole like the mafia, the Stallone of it all, whatever. But definitely something I will tune into.
And
at least at the beginning.
Oh, you're gonna watch the whole thing. it's gonna be good.
We'll see.
It's going to be good. Well, and they have an impressive supporting cast as well. Like, Andrea Savage is popping up in this. Martin Starr from Silicon Valley. It just looks like it's going to be... It's a great just sort of fish out of water story. And as Vogel said, with sort of the acting style of Sylvester Stallone, Stallone's always been a great actor. I mean, you know, he kind of got lost in the 80s when he was becoming, you know, the action star. But he really is a tremendous, tremendous performer. And all you need to do is watch, you know, either the Creed movies, watch, you know, the latest Rocky Balboa. I mean, he's a dynamic, dynamic performer. And watching him get to play this role, I think is going to be an absolute joy. And this comes out November 12th on Paramount Plus. And like, if you haven't checked out Paramount Plus, it is low key becoming one of my more favorite streamers. I mean, they have some great, like, I'm not a Star Trek guy, but they've got all the Star Trek series. They have The Offer, which was about the making of The Godfather, which was a really, really fantastic limited series. So, you know, come November 12th,
They've got Drag Race.
There you go. They've got all the Nickelodeon content. If you have, you know, younger ones at home. So yes, November 13th. For Paramount Plus, that's when we will get to see Sylvester Stallone in Tulsa King. So now we are going to try to take a little break. We'll see if I can do this correctly. John gave me the tutorial. We're going to cross our fingers. What are we going to talk about next, Mike? Because honestly, this is where I would hum a theme, but I don't remember. So what are we talking about next?
Well, we are going to do sort of a state of geekdom and talk about how we're feeling about Lord of the Rings, the Rings of Power, how we're feeling about House of the Dragon, and also talk about that new 9-minute behind-the-scenes Andor thing that dropped this morning on Disney Plus for Disney Plus Day.
All right, you heard it here, and we'll be right back. Do 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 dun dun do do dun dun do do dun. No, I threw that in there. I threw the Force theme in there. Okay, just back off.
Okay. Well, like I said before the break, we realized that in the past few weeks it's been a little bit crazy. I've been running around half naked in the desert. John Rocha, I assume, has been running around half naked in his apartment, going stir crazy because he's got COVID. And so it's been a little bit hard for all of us to be together to do the reviews. And it just happens to be coming at a time where we are just getting flooded with an absolute ton of geek content. We are back in Westeros. We are back in Middle Earth. And in a few weeks, we're about to be back in a galaxy far, far far away in a very big way. So knowing that we kind of missed a few reviews and knowing that once Johnny is feeling better, we're going to try and get back on track and give you full spoiler reviews for a lot of these things, we thought today we'd just take a minute and talk about how we're feeling about kind of all of these things. Like I said, we've got the latest installment of House of the Dragon this past Sunday. We had the first two episodes of Rings of Power are now on Amazon, on Amazon Prime. And in addition to that, for Disney Plus Day, in addition to Thor Love and Thunder now being on Disney Plus, in addition to the new live-action Pinocchio, new Cars animated series, they also released a 9-minute behind-the-scenes look at Andor, which actually had some really nice new stuff, a nice extended scene for us to chew on. So, wanted to talk about all of that. Let's start things off with House of the Dragon. It's been out the longest. So we've talked about House of Dragon a little bit. We did a spoiler review a few weeks ago, kind of talking about how we felt about the return to Westeros. But we've had two episodes since then. And Shannon, how are you feeling now that we're a little bit more, not quite to the halfway point of the season, but we're definitely into the meat of the story at this point?
Well, it, along with Lord of the Rings, especially coming out of Comic-Con, because those were not panels that we attended. So watching all of the marketing material for House of the Dragon, I was kind of like, yeah, it could be good. I mean, I'm sort of emotionally divested from Game of Thrones because of that last season. So it was like, production-wise, it looks incredible. They have a tremendous cast. Now, three episodes in, I'm really, really digging it. I mean, they did a great job in that first episode, which we did talk about, of sort of laying out a very easy to digest story, in that it's a time when we don't know who the heir is going to be. Like, it started with this with Jaharis, all his sons died, so then it went to hit two of his grandkids, and it's like, do we give it to the eldest, who was a woman, or do we give it to the oldest boy? And they left it up to the lords of Westeros, and they picked Viserys, the guy. So flash forward however many years, and now we see that it's kind of a similar situation, is that his wife is pregnant. He has a daughter. Right now, the heir would be his younger brother, who's Daemon, who is tremendously being played by Matt Smith. And that first episode concludes with him picking his daughter, Rhaenyra. Now going into the second and third episode, it's funny how all things Westeros has those moments of, is this too far? And you know, and we discussed at great length the birthing scene, which for me, I'm kind of like, I get why you needed that in the story, but do I think you needed to go that graphic? No. I don't know what that got you. And, you know, based off our audience's comments, they were kind of split down the middle. Like, some people were like, no, that's absolutely, and a lot of women who were like, no, that worked. Now, with Viserys' wife gone, like, it's like he has to remarry. Like, he has to potentially produce more heirs. And the bride, or one of the potential brides that they choose for him, is his cousin's husband's daughter, who is
correct
about 11.
Yeah.
10 or 11, and watching the two of them, like, you see them walking and having a conversation, and this was definitely one of those moments of, Now, we have read about stuff like this that has happened in history, and it's a little, you know, it's one thing to read it, it's another thing to watch it. And so there was definitely that moment of like, oh my God, is this the way they're going? But you can see as they're talking how much he is responding to Alicent Hightower, who is the daughter of his hand, Otto. The show's just done a great job of getting you invested in these characters and their mm-hmm. stories right away. And going into episode three, watching sort of this separation between him and Rhaenyra, him trying to connect with his daughter, trying to find her a husband, and whether or not she actually will be the heir, I'm really digging the show. Like, I'm actually surprised I'm enjoying it this much, because even like when I started watching Game of Thrones, beautiful production value, but I mean, it was a dense story. So there's a lot of names that sound similar. A lot of folks had read those books, so they were, you know, probably loving it right off the bat. When you're being introduced to this world, it can be a little difficult to follow. I'm much more into House of the Dragon thus far than I was at Game of Thrones. And that's not because of a deficiency in Game of Thrones in season one. It was because it was just so difficult to kind of get ensconced in that world. But thus far, I'm really enjoying House of the Dragon.
Yeah, I think House of the Dragon benefits from the fact that, kind of to your point, like I was one of those people who had read Game of Thrones prior to the show coming out. So when the show came out, I had at least a base level of knowledge of what was going on. So it was easier to track who was who and what was going on. I think this show benefits from the fact that most people watching this show watched at least some of Game of Thrones. And so all of us have a little bit more of an understanding of Westeros. We kind of know location. So even though they're throwing in some new characters, some new houses, some new things, like we all have that base level of understanding. And I think they just hit the ground running with a really easy to grasp story. Like, who is going to be the heir? Like, who is going to sit on the Iron Throne? Which is really at the core of what any Game of Thrones story is. All of Game of Thrones was about who is going to sit on the Iron Throne. So, you know, you've got an Iron Throne. You want to know who's going to sit on it. You got a badass blonde with her dragons. Like, they've done a really great job. We talked about this, I think, when we did the spoiler review of giving us all the things that feel like Game of Thrones. I think Lord of the Rings does a very similar thing. So when we get to that, we'll talk about it. But they're giving us all the things we expect out of a Game of Thrones. So there's that familiarity that we're like, yep, this checks the box. This is it. But they're giving it to us in a brand new way with brand new characters, in a way that, like, I think there's going to be some big surprises. I think there's going to be some interesting twists and turns. I mean, already, the relationship between Rhaenyra and Alicent in the first episode and the relationship between Rhaenyra and Alicent in the third episode, that escalated quickly, as they say. Like, that, you know, so, like, they've just done a really nice job of following the story. And Rhaenyra is really compelling. Like, she doesn't feel to me like a Daenerys stand-in. It doesn't feel to me like, oh, okay, this is the Daenerys. Like, she really is an interesting character with some very interesting struggles of her own, and I'm really curious to see where this goes. I will say that for me, I think one of the most interesting characters is Viserys. Mm-hmm. They've done a really nice job with him of, he's neither good guy nor bad guy. He's just a king who's probably not the best king, who's trying to do his best, and he's acting the absolute shit out of it. Like, you know, like they walk this fine line of like, oh, I'm the dad and you have to get married and I have to marry you off, and everybody expects me to have my son, who is now my firstborn son, be the heir. And you're like, oh, he's going to like totally skip over Rhaenyra now. But then he doesn't want to skip over Rhaenyra, and he kind of like tells the Lannister guy off. Like he just, they do such a lovely job of like, just when you think they're sending this character in one direction, he does something that sort of balances out. You're like, oh, he's not such a bad guy. And then you're like, okay, I think I'm on his side. And then he'll do something that's kind of shitty. And right. Just watching him struggle with being a subpar king who probably doesn't deserve to be king is just, to me, a new thing that we haven't seen. Like, Robert Baratheon in Game of Thrones, arguably also not a guy who could be king, but really all he wanted to do was drink and fuck and have parties. Like, he was like your favorite frat brother that got to be king, and you're like, all right, I'll give it to you. Viserys just feels like, you just feel the weight of this crown on him, and you're like, man, you ain't it, buddy. Like,
Rhaenyra, or
yeah, and like, well, and like, to have a show where both Rhaenyra and Daemon are way more compelling, and whether Daemon would be a good king or not would definitely make the most of it in a way that his brother does not. I mean, so like, I think having this sort of lame duck king in the middle of all of this other stuff just kind of reinforces the importance of like choosing the right heir. So I think that's a great scene. And then the other thing that I've been really pleasantly surprised by, it's a little thing, but I really enjoy it, is the dragon design. Like, they've really, now that we're in an era of Westeros where there are more dragons, they're not skimping on the design aesthetic. They're not just kind of going, okay, well, this is what dragons in Westeros look like, let's like recolor them. Like, Daemon's dragon has a completely different shape. It's this long, skinny dragon that twists in different ways. And so just the opportunity to see all these different kinds of dragons is something else that I think they're really, really doubling down on. And I think it's working for them.
Okay, so three questions for you, and then we can move on. But with Alicent and Rhaenyra, especially in the first episode, did you get a romance vibe from Rhaenyra, or did you get more just a platonic? Because at this point, we feel like Alicent, okay, she's a she's a player within the system. She's going to do what she has to do, more mainly at the command of her father. But I definitely got, especially when at the end of episode two, when he says that he's going to marry Alicent, I definitely got that vibe of Rhaenyra. This is not only her friend marrying her father. This is the person she loved marrying someone else.
I did not get that vibe. So that's really interesting. I didn't. Usually I'm the first one to be like, you're queer, queer, queer. But I did not. No, I did not get that vibe at all. Like I completely felt that that was a, you are my best friend and I confide in you and I tell you everything. And then you went and married my dad and pulled the rug out from under me. And now I can't trust you as my friend. And so I feel like I've lost my best friend and confidant and I don't know who to talk to. Like that's how I read it. But I could see it going either way. Like I think that is a completely valid read. And particularly given the fact that Rhaenyra, I mean, you know, I don't know how far they're going to go into this, but is it true that throughout history there were women and men who were, who needed to marry for political reasons, who had no desire to marry somebody of the opposite gender? And Rhaenyra, I think thus far, like, her goal is, like, she's a badass. She wants to go fight and do major things, and could she be queer? And could that be a part of why she doesn't want to marry? Absolutely. I'll be interested to see where we go. But if she wasn't, I think it's still equally as compelling. I do, because, like, I also think, like, they're setting up her and the guy from Dorne. Yes. Her, the guy who, what's his name?
I'm literally looking it up right now because I couldn't remember
the
either.
Goldcloak? The hottie Goldcloak. That's what I call him. Hottie Goldcloak.
Sir Criston Cole.
Like, there's definitely a potential, like, romantic vibe there as well in the third episode where they were, like, out together and then, like, killed that boar. Also, I want to get you all these questions. I do want to say, They have doubled down on her being a badass, and it works for me. In episode two, when Otto Hightower goes to get that egg from Daemon, and just, like, it is a standstill, and then she just rolls up in her dragon and is like, well, I did some shit. And I was like, well, okay, that's like, the most badass thing. When she rolls up into the whole hunt party scene, bloody as shit, particularly, like, Viserys stabbing that stag in episode three is so pitiful.
Yeah.
It's just such a, all right, king, come and stab this thing and whatever. And then to have her walk in just bloodied, dragging that boar, and everybody looks at her and you're like, dude, I am fully in on this show. What's your next question?
Okay, so thoughts, feelings on them using the original Game of Thrones opening a theme for the opening credits?
Literally looked at my brother after we got back from Burning Man, we watched the two episodes and I go, This is smart. It's a banger theme. It has always been a banger theme. And I think that much like the Star Wars theme, much like, you know, there's just certain movies where there are themes that you're just like, I want this theme and I always want this theme. Like, could they have done a different theme that was equally as beautiful and compelling? Sure. But I think opening with that music reminds you that this is a, Westeros is, there is a history to Westeros, and we are jumping in at a different era. But again, just like giving us the Iron Throne, just like giving us the Targaryens and their dragons, like, they are reminding us that we're giving you something new, but we're also giving you what you want.
Speaking of the Iron Throne, I'll get to my last question in just a moment, but speaking of the Iron Throne, especially when you see how banged up Viserys is, it's like, maybe we put a cushion on that. Maybe we put a cushion. Like, not so many sharp edges on this seat that you have to sit on every day.
But that's the thing. I mean, like, and I think they do make a point of this in the first Game of Thrones.
A point? Like, ah!
Jesus, God. I thought we would get through this whole episode without any of those, but... Wow.
Oh, John's gonna hate this.
No, but I do think they do make a point of the fact that that is part of it. Like that, you know, when you sit on the Iron Throne, if the Iron Throne cuts you, you don't got what it takes. And Viserys having, the cuts and scrapes that he gets from sitting on that throne is very intentional.
And last question. So this is the one part, and I could change, and my opinion might change depending on how they use this character going forward. But in my opinion, the one casting choice that they've made that I thought was was for Jason Lannister. I've never seen a Lannister, like, he just does, he didn't have that swagger that Tywin and Jaime and Tyrion and Cersei all had. Like, he had kind of a scraggly beard, which I was like, okay, Tywin had a beard, but it was more like the stubble beard. Like, he does not feel like a Lannister to me. And they're projecting a lot of like, well, his, you know, his ego has an ego. And I'm like, I don't really sense that from this guy. Like, I was expecting someone a bit more of a smoother operator. So that one really bumped me. But what did you, did this bump you?
It didn't bump me, but I mean, now that you're saying it, I don't disagree with you. Like, as a Lannister, you know, it's kind of a tough thing to pull off because we want a Lannister to be a Lannister, but in the way that he was used in the episode, he showed up and got dressed down twice.
Right.
Like, Rhaenyra dresses him down, and then he goes and talks to the king, who dresses him down again. And so it's like, it's hard to say to an actor, we need you to have this swagger and be confident and be arrogant and be all these things, but also you need to react to the fact that you get the rug pulled out from under you two times in like 15 minutes. So I think that I'm interested to see where everything goes with the Lannisters. But yeah, I don't think you're wrong. I don't think he necessarily, when you look at like Tywin, even Tyrion and Jaime and Cersei, you're kind of like, yeah, I don't know if you quite stack up to that. That is it's quite a family to live up to. but as speaking of living up to though, I also just want to say like, Matt Smith is doing the Lord's work as Daemon Targaryen.
Ooh.
Yeah, I think that just watching him, whether it be kind of stealing the egg and having that confrontation with Otto Hightower in episode 2, or just realizing that his brother is coming to save the day in their battle with the crab guy.
The crab feeder.
And just fucking going for it by himself so that he can take the win. I mean, like, that was pretty epic. So... I think I said this in our spoiler review. I think what we think is going to happen with him is not going to happen with him. Like, I think like some people are like, oh, he's going to be the big villain. It's going to be him versus Rhaenyra. And I'm like, I don't know that that's what's going to happen. I'm very curious. Like he's such a compelling character. And again, to your point, that's what's awesome about this show is within 3 episodes after us being done with Westeros, we have just gotten right back into, ooh, who's going to be this? And I think this, and what is Otto Hightower up to? And what is he going to make his daughter do next? And that is what you want people to be doing when they're watching Game of Thrones.
Well, and also, like, it was announced that Miguel Sapochnik is stepping away at, like, for season 2, but Ryan Condal, who is the co-creator with George R. R. Martin, is still going to be there. So that I remember seeing that headline, like House of Dragons showrunner stepping down. I'm like, oh no, already? It's just like Westeros. But knowing that mainly as a director, he's like, I want to go do other stuff. Like, I did a season of this now. But anything else to say on House of the Dragon?
No, I'm just really looking forward to where it goes next. I'm really excited.
Shall we move on to Middle Earth?
We shall move on to Middle Earth. How are you feeling? Let me ask you some questions, Shannon. As one of the more diminutive members of the Geek Buddies, how are you feeling about a return to Middle Earth?
Boy, if I'd had the Matrix thing pulled up, I'd have zipped you like this. thus far, 2 episodes in, I rewatched them. They are visually stunning. Like, all of the, you know, $1 billion that they're spending on this show, it is all up there on the screen. Because I was not an avid Tolkien reader, like, I know a lot of folks who did not just Lord of the Rings, The Hobbit, but the Silmarillion. Is that how you say it? Silmarillion?
I think the second one is right.
Silmarillion.
There, sure. Let's go with that. Sounds great.
Well, I mean, looking at some of my friends who are big Tolkien people who are like, oh, I'm seeing these names and I never, you know, from the books and all this stuff. So, I mean, that's not really hitting me as much. It's a visually just a gorgeous, gorgeous world. I have no issues with any of the characters, with any of the actors. It's just sort of, it's very much like, I was kind of thinking it's like the first season of Boardwalk Empire. Like, this has the pace of an HBO show, an old school HBO show. Like, Boardwalk Empire,
I didn't get into that show until episode 7 of 10 in the first season. Like, I remember, I really liked Steve Buscemi. So I'm like, I'm going to keep watching this. And, you know, it's such a nice looking show. But at this point, the story has not really kicked into high gear for me yet, at least. I mean, we have our, you know, cosmic Starman, who is that Gandalf? Is that Saruman? Like I don't know how old these people are. So I don't know. Like, was Gandalf around?
I just think it's David Bowie.
You think? Oh, okay.
It's David Bowie.
I think the Galadriel character is awesome. Like, that whole opening with the ice troll, I thought that was fantastic, and I hope we get back to that soon. I really, especially in episode 2, really loved the relationship between Elrond and Durin. Like, the whole sequence, like, I imagine yeah. John was losing his mind at that part, because John loves the dwarves. But just watching that conversation on the elevator, and the line that he had, that, like, I get that 20 years goes by in the blink of an eye for an elf, but in that time, I lived a whole life. Like, that is, to me, that is such great writing. Yeah. And it's a friendship that I think we all understand. I love the one elf. Is it Elrondir?
I think so, yeah.
The one who's kind of hanging out with the humans, who clearly that's probably his kid. I really like that character. There's something about that actor that is so magnetic that as soon as he, like, even just seeing him in the trailers, I'm like, I think I'm going to be interested in that guy. And watching this relationship that he has with the humans and getting that, the right term, that discrimination, I guess, that
would be the right term, yes.
Like, calling them knife ears, calling them pointy ears, like, watching that dynamic is really interesting. And again, not having been a huge Tolkien person, like, I know by the time we get to Lord of the Rings that there is a distrust between the races of Middle Earth, but not to the point that the elves had sort of injected themselves into their lives, and they're like, you know, we want you to go.
Yeah.
It's a really, really interesting setup right now. But as I finished episode 2 for the first time, I'm like, I don't know if this is really going to have the rewatch value. Like, it's not grabbing me right now, but I went ahead and watched them both again, and I do like them, but not that it's a competition. But House of the Dragon to me is the thing that's yeah. clicking for me a little bit more.
I like them both in different ways. I know that's not that's the political answer, but like I do think Lord of the Rings, they're doing the same thing that I was saying House of the Dragons does, which I think is very smart. Like, they've given us the Harfoots, so we've got our sort of like hobbity characters, we've got our elves, we've got our dwarves, we've got man, we've got like the setup, we've got Sauron. We've got the, like, to your point, you know, you see an elf and a dwarf having a contentious relationship and you're like, well, that feels like Lord of the Rings to me. So they're giving us all the things that we want. It looks gorgeous. I mean, yeah. Every single bit of the money that they are spending is on screen. And I just do sort of, you know, coming back from Burning Man, I kind of did 2 episodes of House of the Dragon and 2 episodes of Lord of the Rings back to back. And I was just sort of overwhelmed that this is what TV is for us now. Like, this is what we get sitting on our couches, and it's insane that we're getting that.
Well, it's not what we get with everything.
It's not what we get. Well, that is true. That is true. But I'm glad that for these two, we get it. It's a slower burn. It's a slower setup, but part of that feels like Lord of the Rings to me. Lord of the Rings always has this, even when I read Lord of the Rings, it feels, heavier. You've got to really plod through it. Like, it's a little bit like reading an actual history book where you're like, okay, this is all right. Yes. And then we're going to get into great detail about every single one of these things. And then we get to the good stuff. So it feels like watching Lord of the Rings and the fact that this is slower. Like, I agree with you that House of the Dragons, right off the bat, as we were just saying, like, you dive in and you're like, well, what does this mean? And who's this? And what is Otto doing? And Alicent is going to do this, but what is Viserys going to do? And Rhaenyra should do this. Oh, look, that's the White Stag. She saw the White Stag. It wasn't the White Stag. And we get very, very invested. And with Lord of the Rings, we're like, okay, this is really pretty. I see everyone slowly coming together, and this is okay. You're in the water, and you're dealing with the hippie who just fell out of the sky, and you went into the cave, and the creepy people took you away. And okay, I got it. I see what's going on, but we don't really have that drive yet. Now they're gonna have to get there at some point. Like, at some point, we're going to have to, like, as these groups come together and we sort of get the big, this is the scope of the season, we're going to have to drop in and be like, well, now I'm really, really into it. So I think it's going to be, the next couple episodes are going to be really interesting to see how quickly the pace moves. But it's like a warm blanket to me. Like, mm-hmm. you know, like, it's like wrapping yourself in the warm blanket of Middle Earth just feels nice. And the whole world is shot in such a lush, wonderful way that it just feels nice watching it, even when you're like, eh, it's a little bit slow.
Well, and you definitely see the progression of where this younger Galadriel could theoretically hook up with the Cate Blanchett Galadriel.
You know,
Elrond
yeah,
is different.
Yeah, but it's interesting. Like, elves are long lived, and you know, I mean, I see. We'll talk about criticism, I guess, in a second. I guess we can't avoid talking about idiots on social media, but you know, I've seen some critiques that like this more active Galadriel doesn't feel like the more stoic Galadriel. But it's kind of like, and they've said this, the creators have said this, and the actress has said this. It's like, well, yeah, but this is the journey. Like, she went through all this stuff and had all this. She learned a lot to get to there, and I totally buy that. I think most of our viewers agree with this, but I think you just have to say it. It really doesn't matter what color you are when you're a hobbit or an elf or a dwarf in a made-up universe, and it's fine. And people who are like having this whole, this isn't what Tolkien wanted it to be, or this isn't what Tolkien pictured, and that's not how he described it in the books, like, just shut up.
Yeah, the amount of people going at Neil Gaiman saying, you know, we deserve the Lord, you know, we deserve you to do a good Lord of the Rings show, not realizing that Neil Gaiman has nothing to do with it. Neil Gaiman's just sort of chiming in, being like, yeah, yeah. I disagree with you. I think you're wrong.
Yeah, I think that, you know, it is high time that we let this idea that our made up universes have to have the same racial issues that we have in real life. Like, they're made up universes for a reason, and let's make them a little bit better. So, yeah, so that's enough said about that. But why don't we take a quick break? Because we have to have all of our breaks in before we talk about Andor.
Hey. Do, 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 do.
There it was.
That
was
hey.
That was stronger that time.
Sorry.
Why are we live with StreamYard up there?
You know, I don't know. I probably hit the wrong button. There we go. There we go. I got it.
All right. We'll cut that part out. All right. So we're back. as we are recording this, it is Disney Plus Day. Disney Plus has a whole bunch of new things that have come out. We've got our live action Pinocchio is now there for people to see. We've got Thor: Love and Thunder now available on Disney Plus. We have a brand new series of cartoons from Pixar and Cars. And as part of Disney Plus Day, we have the behind the scenes look at the making of Obi-Wan Kenobi. We have a behind the scenes look on Thor: Love and Thunder, and we have a 9-minute look behind the scenes of Andor. So obviously we've been talking about Andor every time a trailer is dropped. We've been talking about it. Shannon, what did you think of this new first look? Any new stuff that you liked? Was it more of the same? What are you feeling about it?
More of the same in all the best ways. I actually went and saw, I guess, yeah, it would have been while you were gone. Rogue One has been in IMAX, and they're playing that 9 minutes before the movie. And so one, going in and experiencing that movie again in an IMAX theater, Rogue One is just so damn good. Like, it's just such a well done movie. But then getting to see that 9 minutes ahead of time, which, you know, I went ahead and rewatched it again this morning. I'm just so excited. I mean, you know, we've all really enjoyed, I think we've all really enjoyed some of the Disney Plus Star Wars offerings. I think across the board, everyone seems to be on board with The Mandalorian, Book of Boba Fett. You know, people had their issues, and the same with Obi-Wan, and to a lesser extent, Bad Batch. I mean, Bad Batch took a minute to get going, but I think everyone is into that world. They're into those characters. Andor really feels like something special. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that is just Tony Gilroy, if that is the way that this was shot and that they are not using the volume, the fact that they did do a bunch of location shooting. This looks like a real world. And it seems like a real world with real stakes. And it's just really exciting. Like bringing back Diego Luna and getting, you know, we got a glimpse of this character in Rogue One. And now knowing that we're going to start with him as a kid and how they call this a migrant story, growing up, being displaced in the world of the Empire. It's just exciting storytelling territory. And I don't think it wasn't in the 9 minutes, but Tony Gilroy did give an interview because I guess the original idea for the show was it was going to be Cassian and K2SO just kind of on adventures. And, you know, good for him, to his point, he's like, how long can you sustain that? He's like, as a pair, they're great. He's like, but how long can you really sustain that? Like, what if we go back a little bit further and we go back to the beginnings of Cassian? Like, this just feels, it feels familiar, but it feels different.
That's the theme of the day. It's the theme of the day.
It just looks so good. And that extended scene between Cassian and Stellan Skarsgård's character, where he's kind of laying the trap for Cassian, saying, you know, basically poking him for answers. Like, are you going to tell me what I need to hear? Are you the guy? Are you the guy that I've been looking for?
Yeah.
And just the sort of, when they get into the action, when they get into the blaster fight, sort of the frenetic nature of the environment. Like, I feel like that's something we have not gotten yet with most of the Disney Plus series. Maybe Mandalorian season one a little bit. Maybe episode three, where they do have that gunfight on Navarro. But there's just something so, the stakes just feel so high in this series from the premise right from the beginning. And that new villain, that new Imperial villain, the blonde woman, seems, she just has that quiet menace that I think Ben Mendelsohn really did a great job with in Rogue One. So yeah. Andor seems like it's going to be dynamite.
Yeah, I have high expectations. I'm with you. I have high expectations. I think that, and I know that there's going to be a section of social media that gets super mad about this, but I think to your point about doing this version of Andor versus Cassian Andor and K2SO just running around doing adventures, it's about something. Like, yeah. There just seems to be this, Tony Gilroy just has this confidence when he talks about what he's doing. Like, he says in the 9 minute piece, he's like, we're filling in this 5 years of Star Wars. Like, this 5 years of Star Wars and this part of the history of the Empire, we're filling in the gaps here. And by making it a migrant story, by making it about a character that was displaced and didn't know and kind of went on this journey to stand up for himself, there's definitely overtones and parallels that people are going to make about the world that we live in today. And some people are going to absolutely hate that, and some people are going to absolutely love it. But I think that when you're doing Star Wars, when we live in this era where we want to just sort of have all of these stories being told in a galaxy far, far away, you can absolutely tell a story where a guy and his droid and his alien and a girl and whoever get in a ship and go to hyperspace, and there's a MacGuffin, and they got to get the MacGuffin, and you got to avoid the Empire, and you got to do it, and it's super fun. But when you tell a story that actually has meat on the bones, it's like about a little bit more than that, and you use all the pieces of Star Wars to tell a story that feels a little bit more, that's always more powerful. And it kind of feels to me like that's where Andor is headed. So, I'm kind of to your point. I don't think that... I love the extended scene between Luna and Skarsgård. I thought, like, you just saw two really great actors just bouncing off of each other, and the energy was really electric. Beyond that, I don't think we saw anything that was new, but everything that we saw was just more of the same, and it's really... The hype train has hit warp speed. Like, we are in it. It has hit hyperspace, not warp speed. Don't want to get yelled at about that one. But like we are in it. So hotly anticipating this one.
Yeah, and it will be coming out in, what, 2 weeks, I believe?
Yeah,
a little less than two weeks. It's September 21st. Woo! And they're opening with 3 episodes.
Ooh, good thing Johnny gonna be better by then. We got a lot to cover.
So I think we should probably take a little break before we get into our abbreviated main topic of What I Would Do with the Future of DC by Michael Vogel. We'll be right back.
Well done. I'll take it. That's my theme. It's my theme.
So we found out a little bit ago, DC is trying to find their Kevin Feige, which, you know, kudos for them that they're actually being upfront about this, being like, you know what? We need our guy like that to really kick this thing into high gear. And it seemed like for a minute it was going to be Dan Lin, who is a producer, has his own company called Rideback. He has worked on, you know, the Lego movies. But it came out that he is not going to be taking the job. It seemed like part of it was Rideback had a deal with Universal, and to get that over to Warner Brothers was going to present some challenges. Other folks, different sources say he just outright rejected the job. Either way, he's not going to be the guy. Now, if you have been with us for, what, however many, 3 years now, you know that along with being an entertaining podcaster, Mike Vogel, he's a pretty good writer and is a big DC fan. And has had
although it doesn't seem like it on the Geek Buddies.
Correction, he's a big DC Comics fan, but has had some strong thoughts, some good ideas about where potentially DC could go, a way to get their train back on the tracks. So I'll turn it over to him at this point. Vogel, what would you do? You're stepping into this job.
Well, I know you said. Go ahead.
Who do you keep? Do you keep anybody, or is it a complete blank slate? What do you do?
Well, I mean, I think first of all, I know you said when we started this. First of all, this is a silly topic, and I don't know that I actually am in a position where I deserve to take over things at DC. But John Rocha tweeted this, and we are going to talk about it. But rather than like just flooding you with all of my geek opinions, you know, you said at the beginning, well, we're going to take all the roadblocks out of the way. But I think what's interesting, and I think I know that the Rideback thing is a big part of why Dan Lin backed out of the whole thing. But I think that I've heard from a few people that a lot of people who are being approached are not touching this with a 10-foot pole because of David Zaslav. And because it feels like they're not going to put the money behind this that they need to. Like he says he's going to put together a 10-year plan for DC. And he says he has these big aspirations and he wants DC to be like Marvel is for Disney. But thus far, his actions have not reflected that. And if you're coming into a creative position, you know, Kevin Feige lucked out with Bob Iger and Disney. You know, Bob Iger had Feige's back when Marvel didn't really have Feige's back. When Feige was like, I want to do Shang-Chi. I want to do Captain Marvel. I want to do this. I want Black Panther. I want to really diversify Marvel. Disney was on his side. So part of stepping into these positions when you're actually really considering it is looking at the lay of the land and are you going to get supported or not? And I think that most people looking at Warner Brothers Discovery right now aren't feeling like they're going to be supported. But then
so you're passing.
In,
you're passing is what you're saying.
So I'm passing. Great show, everybody. No. But so assuming you do go in, you know, I do have an opinion. You know, when I worked at Hasbro, Hasbro has always had conversations, like I think most companies do, about shared universes and how do you build a shared universe. And ultimately, that's what Marvel did. Now, DC has sort of split the difference over time. They've like, oh, well, we're going to do a shared universe. Oh, we're not going to do a shared universe. We're going to have like auteur directors come in and do their thing. When you look, just from a financial dollars and cents standpoint, when you look at Marvel being the most successful movie franchise like in history because they are a shared universe, were it me, I would put DC on that train. I might have a couple outliers. I mean, I'm not going to tell Matt Reeves he can't do what he's going to do. Like, you're going to let Matt Reeves continue with his Batman thing. But you really need to consolidate and you really need to let your audiences know, like, this is where we're going. And I think that one of the things I talked about at Hasbro when we would have these meetings, and one of the things I think I've talked about on here, and I think where the proof is in the pudding with Marvel is, what Warner Brothers has tried to do thus far is, let's just get each one of our heroes up and running to varying success. But part of that, there's no bigger story there. I mean, arguably, there was vaguely a let's get to Justice League, but they rushed it so quickly between Man of Steel, Batman versus Superman, Justice League, that you didn't really feel like we were on a journey. So I think, like, rule number one is patience. Rule number two is persistence. And rule number three is, like, a goalpost. And so what I mean about that is, like, you got to be patient. Like, you can't, and I don't think that Warner Brothers has the appetite for this, but you have to come in and say, if we're going to do this, this is the 10-year plan, and you can't change the 10-year plan 3 years in. Because once you do that, you're back to square one. If you want a 10-year plan, you need the 10-year plan. And then you have to have the persistence to carry it through, even when things don't perform great. Like, even when you have an Iron Man 2 or a Thor the Dark World. Like, you've got to say, I know, Shannon, I know you love Thor the Dark World more than me, but there was a few things in, like, those first couple phases of Marvel where if it was a different studio, they would have been, I don't think this is working, let's rethink this. But for the betterment of everybody, even though Iron Man 2 and Thor 2 are not my favorite Marvel movies, they, okay, maybe you stumbled a little bit, but you kept going in the same direction. So you've got to put together a slate, you've got to keep that slate, and then you pick your goalpost. Now that goalpost can be Darkseid, that goalpost can be a Crisis on Infinite Earths, which is kind of, you know, it can be Flashpoint, it can be whatever. But you've got to, like, let the audience know that this is the goal and then drop the Easter eggs along the way. So those are, like, the broad strokes that I think, it sounds super easy. I think that most people listening to this who are comic book fans or geek fans, like, are all like, yeah, Vogel, that makes sense. I can tell you from experience that when you are in a corporate meeting and you say those things, you are met with a lot of resistance, which sounds shocking, but you are, like, where you're like, well, that's one way to do it, but there's other ways to do it. And you're like, okay, well, what are the other ways to do it? And you end up with, like, no solid answer, which is kind of where I think Warner Brothers is. Now, shockingly, to your actual question of, like, who would I keep and who would stay, as kind of toward the have patience and have persistence, Henry Cavill, not my favorite Superman. I don't think he's a bad actor at all. And maybe he just hasn't had the right material. Maybe Man of Steel just isn't really my jam. But I would do anything to get Henry Cavill back. Like, I would go and say, look, we started a world, we got a little wonky in there, but let's lean into the mess. Like, things were messy for a while, and Superman was absent. Let's really have Superman come back into the fold here. Let's sort of explain where Superman was. Let's do something. Let's create a big event. I'd keep Momoa. I'd keep Gal. I think that Batfleck has had his day. I like the Michael Keaton plan. I don't know where it's going to go post-Flash. But I like this idea that Keaton is coming in as kind of a Batman from a different world, and that Batfleck kind of goes his way, because I don't think we need two Batmen running around. So I like that idea. So I kind of like, I think the first thing you do is you say, okay, who are we keeping? Ezra Miller, I don't envy Warner Brothers' choices here. I mean, like, by all intents that we've heard and what everyone is hearing, like, that movie is a banger. That movie is great. That's why they have Ezra going on the apology tour. Keeping him around would be a tough one for me. Like, I kind of feel like you might want to have that version of Barry make a very noble sacrifice and then have a younger, newer Flash come in as quickly as possible and just clear that deck.
Would you bring in another Barry, or would you bring in a Wally West?
Maybe. I think you could do a Wally West. I think that's what you need to do. I think you just need to, whether they did it at the end of Flashpoint or whether they did it in, like, the very next movie they did, like a Justice League setup movie or in someone else's movie, I would have that Barry go the way of the dodo real quick and get a Wally West or somebody else in there. I would revive Batgirl. I don't know. Like the first thing that I would want if I took over that Warner Brothers job is I would want to see the Batgirl movie. Show me Batgirl. Show me how bad it is. Like, let me see for myself if this is as good or as bad as you say. And then if there's anything worth anything in that movie, if it actually has any kind of merit, I'd be like, all right, let's rethink this and get Batgirl back on track. Like, I would get her back into the fold. I would set up Green Lantern in a way that is more integrated into this. And I would build to, like, a brand new Justice League. You know, I think that, like, the Justice League movie or movies that we have, whether that be the Joss version or the Zach version, I think existed. I think, like, the main thing I would do is even the movies I don't like, I would, like, they existed. They happen. I can't make them disappear. So you keep all that stuff as history. You keep all that stuff. Maybe you do a little bit of recasting. I'd probably recast Lex Luthor. But you keep all the stuff that happened, warts and all. You say, all right, well, all right, Lex Luthor made Doomsday for some reason, and it was kind of weird, and okay, that happened. So I'm not going to, like, erase it and say, let's do our Doomsday story. Like, if there's another Doomsday, it's going to come out of what happened in that movie, whether I like it or not. So I would sort of build from where you are. And I think if you had one or two home runs with movies that really got people excited, people would forgive it. Like, it's a little bit bigger than an Iron Man 2 or a Thor 2. There's definitely a history. There's a section of DC that we're just like, oh, this was really rough. But I think you keep it all and you build from there. Now, does that mean that I'm in the Snyderverse or not in the Snyderverse? I don't know. I don't think that really. I think at a certain point it just becomes the DC universe and it is what it is. But I think that's what you do. I think that's how you do it. Like, I think that the mistake that studios make and the thing that Marvel does not do is they don't just erase. I mean, looking at, like, She-Hulk in these past few weeks, like, I don't think for most people, Edward Norton's The Hulk movie is a top-tier Marvel film. And it wasn't even officially a Marvel film because of the Hulk Universal deal. But Emil Blonsky is running around the MCU right now and just absolutely killing it. So they took the pieces of some of their other movies that maybe weren't the best and weren't the favorite, but they're still spinning gold out of it. And I think that despite the fact that Batman versus Superman is one of my least favorite movies, and there's more that I don't like than I like about it, I would still take that as canon and spin the gold that I could out of it. Let's look at where we left Lex Luthor. Let's look at where we left, Deathstroke. Let's look at where we left all these characters and say, okay, if that's where we left them, if this is where we left Martian Manhunter, if this is where we left these people, where are they now? What's going on? Let's build from there.
Okay. Ray Fisher, bring him back.
I would want to sit down with Ray Fisher and have a long conversation, but yeah, I think so.
All right. Well, Vogel, this has been fascinating. I guess that is our show for this week. You all, please reach out to the Outlaw. Let him know that you hope he feels better, and let him know that the two of us should never be in charge of doing this by ourselves again.
It's very stressful, guys. It's very stressful. He makes it look easy, but it's being the Outlaw is not easy.
I mean, when he was going through, I'm like, okay, I basically get this, but there is a seamless nature that John has now that, you know, I certainly do not. So, yes, that is our show for this week. So I'm trying to think, how does John and Shannon, what do we like to tell him? Well, if you'd like to follow us on social media, on Twitter, it's @geek_buddies. On Instagram, @the_geek_buddies. If you'd like to follow me on social media, on Twitter, it's @Shannon_McClung. On Instagram, @ShannonTheGeekBuddy. If you would like to follow Mr. Vogel, it is @MKToon. If you would like to follow the absent Mr. Roca, it is @TheRocaSays.
And if you like watching us two idiots do what we're doing without John, or if more importantly, you like it when all three idiots are all together, here are some things that you guys can do for us. Definitely hit that like button below. It's really important. And subscribe to Johnny's Outlaw Nation page. Check out all the amazing content that he's got here. Tons of good stuff with us, with others, with everybody under the sun. There's a whole lot of content here. Leave your comments below. I mean, we talked about a lot of things today. Like, what do you think about those trailers? How are you feeling about House of the Dragon? How are you feeling about Lord of the Rings? Are you excited about Andor? And what would you guys do with the DC universe? Because who the fuck am I? Like, just let us know what you would do down below. If you are listening to us on Spotify or Apple Podcasts or anywhere podcasts are available, go ahead and leave us some comments, give us some stars so that we go up in the rankings so more people find us. And as always, the best thing that you guys can do is retweet this video, post it on your socials, and tell your friends to hang out with your buddies, the Geek Buddies.
And as always, thank you so much to Carbon Health. If you're feeling under the weather, if you're feeling like you need to go and get checked out, Carbon Health has a bunch of locations. And yeah, I have been to Carbon Health and I was in and out in about 5 minutes because they were just incredibly efficient and incredibly kind.
Well, there you go.
Hey.
Thank you guys so much. And again, as Shannon said, let's all wish the outlaw a get well very soon so that you guys don't have to deal with just the two of us. And we will see you hopefully with John next time on a brand new episode of the
Geek
Buddies!
Hello, friends. This is Mark Nell, executive producer of the Table Read podcast, where imagination meets performance. As we wrap up an incredible season one, we want to take a moment to express our heartfelt gratitude to each and every one of you who tuned in and supported us on this amazing journey. Season one was nothing short of extraordinary. We delved into captivating scripts that transported us to worlds beyond our imagination, thanks to the brilliant writers who delivered these works. But what really brought these stories to life were the talents of our amazing actors. But wait, the excitement doesn't end there. As we bid farewell to season one, we are thrilled to announce the launch of season two. Get ready for more gripping narratives, more unforgettable characters, and more mesmerizing performances that will keep you on the edge of your seat. We have some big surprises coming. The Force will definitely be with you. So stay tuned, stay engaged, and most importantly, stay excited. From all of us at the Table Read Podcast, thank you. And let's make season two even more memorable together.